16 million Americans, 5% of our population, are crippled by serious mental illness, according to the National Institute of Mental Health. We need to redefine madness and understand that some people who may appear mad or unconventional may just be visionaries and capable in taking us to a whole new level of functioning in society.
Finally, a psychotherapist that focuses on helping people strive for self-awareness and thrive for self-satisfaction with their place in the world. It's a show for real people with real lives, with all the drama, trauma, and chaos that life can throw at you. Here she is, Dr. Bev.
I am so excited to introduce my guest to you, Dr. Emma Bragdon. She is a transpersonal psychologist. She is the founder and current executive director of Integrative Mental Health for You, an online educational resource. She is deeply involved with metaphysics, energy healing, spiritual healing, and meditation since 1964. Emma, thank you for coming on our show today.
Oh, you're so welcome, Dr. Bev. It's a pleasure to be invited to be on your show.
Can you tell me, how did you get started in this? What's your story?
Like many people in the United States and other places, I came from a family that was not perfect. So they were not familiar with talking about feelings or emotions of any kind. And there was actually a lot of pretty strong dysfunction in the family. So in the extended family, there was suicide, there was alcoholism, and depression, bipolar, or manic depression. So at a young age, I felt very, very strongly, I want to be able to help people. And I guess the first step is to learn something about psychology and psychiatry, go to school on it, and also be around people who need help and see if there's anything I can do for them. So that was my early life. And literally at 8 years old, I had this strong sense, this is what I was going to do with my life. But it took me a while, of course, to finish all of my schooling. And I chose transpersonal psychology, which is really includes all of the study of what we call mental illness or pathology, as well as the transpersonal, which means going beyond ego into a more expanded states of consciousness. And the reason I wanted to do that was I had been meditating for a period of time, and I knew that in my own practice of meditation, which was expanding my consciousness and helping me to commune more fully with what we generally call God or the Creator, that experience in meditation was really uplifting for me and was assisting me to make clearer choices in my life. So my mind was becoming more clear. I had less need of sleep. And so there were a lot of, and I had more empathy and compassion for other people. And if I can say this, I would
and
say.
And yes, you may. This is emotions. This is.
Okay. I believe that because of the meditation, I was also having access to a little bit more wisdom than I had naturally. So anyway, I saw the very positive aspect of meditation. And so I felt that if I'm going to go into the mental health area, I want it to be a kind of psychology that clearly knows that there's something extremely positive in spiritual practices. And we need to integrate that into our mental health system so that people can reach the highest potential that they have. So, and I recognize there's not one way of spirituality. There's not one religion. There's not one way of spirituality. There's not one philosophy that everyone should follow, that everyone has to find their own way. And for some people, they don't like the word spirituality at all and would prefer to talk about finding a path of meaning and purpose. So that's okay by me, but I think when people really delve deeply into what gives life meaning, that they do come up with something that we might call spiritual, even if it's bowling. You know,
I agree with you.
Yeah, it's ostensibly doesn't look like a spiritual practice, but if someone's really turned on by it and gets great fulfillment in doing it and has very close communications that are satisfying with, you know, their teammates, there's something that they're getting from it that we might say is resonates with spiritual qualities.
Well, I realize that in talking to clients who are athletes or runners, they get what they call a spiritual high, a meditative high from running, from physical exercise. And it's they say, Dr. Bev, I just can't sit still and just quiet my mind. But when I'm running, my mind is free of stress and worry. And I get the sense that that's where their spirituality or spirits lie, just like in a bowler. A bowler may be, that may be their meditative moment, that time where they spend being inside of their body, rather outside of their body and onto someone else's body, but being in with themselves. And as you say, going beyond the ego, letting go of control.
Yes. Yeah. That's pretty scary when you say it, isn't it? Letting go of control. Think of ourselves as being in control and being able to make our lives work. But there is something that happens when we totally give ourselves over to something, whether it's running or some form of athletics, like you were mentioning, or whether it's meditation or prayer or gardening. I can think of a number of things that people give themselves over to.
Another question for you is that you are deeply involved, and you have been since 1964, in metaphysics and energy healing, as well as spiritual healing. Can you talk to me about that?
Sure. Well, when I was meditating around that time in my life, what spontaneously began to happen was my body would start shaking. And I thought, what is this about? And I came to feel that it had to do with some parts of my psychology that were demanding to come forward. And I couldn't put a name to it. I had no idea what it was. So I went to a kind of therapist called a Reichian therapist, following mm-hmm. Wilhelm Reich. And in that form of therapy, you actually intend to release energy that is stuck in the body. And oftentimes, if we have, let's say as a child, I'm relating to my own life, if we have a trauma as a child, but we don't feel comfortable expressing all of our feelings, or we feel really in conflict somehow about it, then we kind of stuff it away. And unfortunately, that those emotions actually become like physical constrictions in our system, preventing energy from moving freely through our system. And it can have physical ramifications in terms of being a source for illness. And of course, we know that some people, you know, have, if they are really hurt in their heart, for instance, through some trauma, let's say the loss of a loved one, that they might be more prone to even having a heart attack. So we use that in common language. But the therapy that I got involved with back in the early 60s was embroidering on that theme. And so as part of the therapy, I was actually releasing past trauma. And the more I released, the more I felt that actually the quality of my life improved. And again, I felt that it contributed to my being able to see more clearly, think more clearly, and have more energy. So from that time in the early 60s, I thought, okay, there's something about bringing energy work into mental health as well as meditation that will expand the way we practice mental health and will really innovate it and improve it, as far as I was concerned. Because if people are actually holding energy in their body that obstructs them and can lead to disease, it's not necessarily going to dissipate because they do talk therapy and just talk about what happened to them. That might have a positive impact, but if we can actually release that energy through the help of a therapist that's really qualified, that can have an enormous impact and actually be much, much faster than talk therapy. So I don't want to be remembered as someone who puts down talk therapy, because there's a tremendous amount of benefit with it, and I do it myself. In other words, I'm still practicing as a psychotherapist, but I do feel that the energy work is profound. And since 1964, as you, Dr. Bev, well know, there are so many different forms of energy work and so many different energy workers that we have a lot to choose from in terms of what energy work are we going to select that will be most helpful in our particular situation. And some of the energy work can be very, very physical and demanding on the person seeking therapy, like the kind that I chose back in 1964. But it can also be extremely subtle. For instance, Reiki therapy, or just Reiki without the word therapy on the end of it, is a kind of practice that is being used in hospitals now. And many people will say, well, it really calms people when they have a Reiki treatment. But people who have a sixth sense, who can be more clear in their perceptions of energy, will say that the Reiki actually also clears obstructions, not only in the physical body, but also in the subtle body. In other words, the energy body that surrounds the physical body.
Please repeat that for me again, in terms of the subtle body and the energy body.
Sure. Many people will say that Reiki sessions not only help to clear obstructions in the physical body, but they can also help clear any kind of obstructions, which we call miasms, that may be in the aura of a person or their subtle body. So this is the energy that is outside of the physical body, but is still very much part of our physical system.
Well, before we go on, I want to make sure that our audience understands Reiki, what is Reiki, and then also what is an aura and the energy field around your body.
Okay. Well, the aura is oftentimes perceived as like a halo. And when you think of a halo, you don't on an angel, you don't necessarily think of a ring that is hovering around the top of someone's head, but instead it's a radiation of light that may be close to the head of an angel, let's say, that we might be seeing at Christmas time. So the aura is like a halo of energy that surrounds the whole body when we are completely healthy. And ideally, people keep themselves in a state of health where that aura has integrity and harmony in it. But when people have an obstruction of their physical energy, it can actually be traced into and perceived as like a seed of which we call a miasm that is in the aura or the halo around the body. And the aura is thought to relate directly to all kinds of issues that relate from our past, things that we may feel still a bit stuck in, as well as our potential to create illness or to create health. So I'm sure, Dr. Bev, you would also have your own perception and your own thoughts about what the aura is. And maybe you'd like to add to what I'm saying.
And definitely I do. You can see, or rather I can see clients who they're angry, they're out of sorts. They may have a diagnostic code of being a narcissist or a bipolar. It really doesn't matter. But however, I can see that the energy that they emanate from themselves just turns everybody off. It brings people down. It doesn't make you feel good to be around that person. You want to get away from them as fast as you possibly can. And in being a psychotherapist and sensing that, I sense that one of the things that we would do, which we'll talk about shortly, is holistic therapy. And that is to get them to recognize what kind of energy they're putting out, because they may not know. They may have had this energy imbibed in them from in vitro, from the uterus. They may have had a mother who was going through a whole lot of uncomfortable and negative things while she was pregnant. And I've always believed that just as a mother eats food for nourishment to give to her baby, it makes a lot of sense to me that the energy that she's carrying, her emotions, whatever they may be, will also be swallowed down by the baby. And so, which brings me back to my opening, in which I said that, you know, many people who we may think of as having mental illness or an emotional illness may not be. They may appear to others to be mad or crazy, so to speak, and I put that in air quotes. They may be unconventional. They just might be doing things another way, a different way. I believe that perhaps some of them, and I've seen this with some of my schizophrenic patients, clients, all their moments aren't schizophrenic. They don't fall under that definition for me as it does in the DSM-4. In a way, I found many to be quite visionaries. And if, when listening closely, I can really find a way to be of service to them so that they can come into some acceptance of that. And then we go to through the structures of behavior and we do other things. So that's where I come from when in terms of aura and in terms of thinking about energy.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because clearly our emotions radiate out from our body, even if we don't say anything. And you can feel it in someone who is really angry. It's as if the energy is radiating out quite a ways from their body. And as you said, people don't like to be close to someone who is radiating that kind of energy.
We're going to hold there for a second and take a short break. We'll be right back with Dr. Emma Brangden.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
As my guest was saying, we're talking about energy and energy in a person's body and how it feels when someone has good energy, they're happy, they're bubbly, they are a comfort to be around. They are the people who you want to lean your head on their shoulders and somehow you just pick up that good feeling. I also think about that in terms of animals as well. Working with animals and the military, how the dogs that we were working with would sniff up or feel the energy of that post 9/11 soldier and would be able to calm him or her down, or if they were having a night terror, actually lay their body across them so they could not get up and hurt themselves or hurt someone else. Jim, you were also speaking about energy as well.
That's a beautiful illustration. I love the picture of a dog laying across someone's stomach so to protect them from getting up and hurting themselves. It's beautiful. So you were asking about working with energy, and because I was meditating and because I was involved with energy work at a young age, I have continued on. So it's been about 50 years now since I started meditating and doing the energy work, and have been exploring really all over the world. And we know that acupuncture used to be thought of as some kind of quaint exercise that came from China. But a few decades ago, when one of our presidents was in China, he received acupuncture. And now we have acupuncture in this country, and decidedly it's been made clear that it's a tremendous benefit for many people who are suffering. And the acupuncture is actually working with the energy systems of our body. Yes, it uses needles, and so there's something mechanical about it. But the reason it uses needles is to actually stimulate the energy flow in the body. So China is one country that has perfected a kind of energy work. And I've also been interested in the energy work that is done in Brazil amongst the spiritists. And some of you may be very unfamiliar with that word spiritist. It sounds like spiritualist, but I really am talking about this less common word called spiritist. And I went to Brazil on an invitation to teach there back in 2001. And as a result of being there, I was invited to visit a place where the spiritual healer, John of God, works. And being in his presence was a whole other landscape in terms of what energy healing can be about. So let me just say that spiritualism, which is quite well known in our country, meaning the United States, and also actually the UK, in spiritualism, people recognize that there are spirits who are can have some kind of a meaningful dialogue with us. And in the 1860s and 70s, when this was really being uncovered in the United States, it was like a big phenomena. It made the headlines. People were just in awe of it. And some of the phenomena that were occurring is that mediums would be sitting in a room, and if they shifted their energy into focusing on their mediumship skills, what might happen is the piano that they were not physically attached to at all would just start playing, or a guitar would start playing, or there'd be knocking or rapping in the walls, and nobody could figure it out, and it was a great marvel.
And I can hear my, if I can pause you for a second, I can hear my audience go, "Oh, wow, that's scary. I'm going to hear knocks on the walls. I'm going to hear pianos playing. I don't know about this spiritist stuff. This seems to be, a little bit much." And when we talk about mediums, the first thing that I know when I speak to it with my clients, the first thing they think of is, a psychic for $10. And I'm like, no, We're not going there. That is not where we're going with what we call a medium.
So let me just say, back in the 1860s and 70s, it was a big phenomena, and people did have big feelings about it. Some people were just fascinated and wanted to learn more, and other people just thought, oh, this is a circus. Let's just get out of here. This is awful. And some people were really frightened by it. But here we are in 2017, and the people who have become spiritists in Brazil recognize that, yes, the spiritualists were correct. There is a possibility of contacting spirits in a meaningful way. And just to make it more common and acceptable, think about all the people who have as a great desire in their heart to be more in contact with Jesus Christ. And we think of Jesus Christ as someone who lives on and on and on forever and is immediately available to us. And in fact, we can contact him through prayer. Well, he in fact is a spirit, and all of us desire to be more in contact with him, even to emulate him. So this notion of having meaningful contact with spirits is very alive in our culture. But unfortunately, there is that group in our culture who are still very connected to the phenomenon and don't use this phenomenon to move ahead in their spiritual life or their spiritual evolution. From my perspective, people who feel that they want to emulate Jesus Christ, or they want to pray to Christ, or they want to feel how the seed of Christ consciousness within them, are using spirituality to evolve and to grow. And this is exactly what the spiritists want to do. So they put aside the circus atmosphere of spiritualism and say, let's use what we've learned in order to bring ourselves closer to Christ. It is, in fact, often called, Spiritism is often called the practical path of Christianity.
And I can really understand and relate to that. I have often said, when we believe in Christ, Jesus, Jah, Buddha, Jehovah, whatever. As one of my guests said, God, Buddha, Jah, Jehovah, Oprah, or Michael, whoever's making me over. It just feels good to me. But in talking about that, you can't physically, and that's how I try to explain that, physically, I can't touch Christ. I can't feel Jah's hands on me. I cannot reach out. It's like incense. We can see the smoke billowing from the incense, but when we go to grab it, our hand goes right through it. That, to me, is that mediumship that we're developing, our spiritual growth that we're developing. And then in also using Jesus Christ as an example, to me, it explains karma. If we believe that he died on the cross for us in such a horrendous way, for our sins, for me, I understand it differently, but that again talks about karma. He's taking on, God took on the karma of the world, the woe of the world, and brought it into himself. And the way that he released that was by being nailed to the cross. However, even as a young child at Easter, this question always came to me. But he rose up. They moved the stone away, and he was alive. And I'm thinking to myself as a child, and that's would be kind of weird. But again, as I grew up in my own spiritualism, I realized that what they were talking about was reincarnation. How do you feel about that?
How do I feel about reincarnation or that interpretation of the story, or both?
or both. Go for it.
Okay. All right. So I was born into a Christian family, and I feel very grateful that I was baptized and was led into church and became acquainted with prayer at a very young age. But I was not acquainted with reincarnation. I had no idea what that was until I was in my teenage years and beginning to study comparative religions. But it still seemed very remote. So I definitely was not taught about reincarnation as a young person. And I was not only taught about Christ's story, but I remember watching very compelling movies that they were showing in the 50s and early 60s in the church that I attended. And so they depicted Christ coming out of the tomb and everyone's awe in how he was somehow alive again. How could he be after so much blood draining out of him and being what anyone would call clinically dead? So the way I have held that particular story from Christianity is that we never die. No one actually ever dies. Yes, our physical body may die, but yet our spirit continues on. And so the story that has come to us through the many different editions of the Christian Bible, I think is really saying that Christ himself, his consciousness, his spirit, did not die. Only his body died. And because he was such an elevated being, in other words, highly, highly evolved, he could actually create the physical something that appeared to us as a physical body, that we could experience as a physical body. When he rolled back the stone in front of his tomb and walked out and appeared again. So that's the way I look at that particular message, but I have come to believe in reincarnation. And I would say that that came not from reading as much as my own meditations. And it has, the more I meditated, the more I had the sense of myself as a spirit that never dies, that will go on into another life, and likely has had prior lifetimes. So that whole sense that we never die and our spirit continues on, learning lessons about life in various classrooms, that makes the most sense to me at this point. And I keep looking, you know, all over the web. I Google it. I try to see how many other people are there now in the world who believe in reincarnation. And nobody can actually nail it down. We might be able to nail it down by just statistics that come from various religions. But it's getting up to at least 50% now of all humanity. And some of the people who have left the Christian religion and started following other philosophies or other religions are beginning to embrace reincarnation. And so we can't say that it is only people who follow certain religious paths that believe in reincarnation. It's a great curiosity to me that, and I personally believe also that we are on the planet, the human species is going through a process of evolution, and more people are becoming more highly sensitive, or their psychic abilities are opening up. They're becoming, in other words, they're becoming more intuitive, sometimes more telepathic. And as that happens, there happen to be more people who believe in reincarnation. So I just find that Very, very curious.
Well, I agree with you, and I believe in that, in having transitioned the body forward, which most people refer to as death. For myself personally, over the past 2 years, I've experienced two major deaths in my life. One is my grandson, who was very young, and he was killed. And then the other is my daughter's grandmother, who was also killed by a truck running through her house, through her yard, hit her house, pushed her body out into the backyard, ran over her, and went back to the street and kept going. Now, for each one of those persons, for both of them, I can say truly that I feel their energy. I was close to them and love them so much that I can feel their energy. There are times when I dream of them, and their voice in the dream is just so real and so alive. When it comes to my grandson, there are times when sadness may come upon me, and I can just hear a whisper. Now, to some people, that might sound a little crazy. Dr. Bev, you're a psychotherapist and you're hearing whispers. Let me look up that under the DSM-4. Well, I'm going to say, you do what you do, and I'm going to do me juicy, because I can feel his spirit just surrounding me with such love that I come out of that dark space for that moment. And also when it comes to my granddaughter's grandmother, it's the same. She was a very compassionate and sensitive and what we call a God-fearing soul, and a very good woman. And she just had such an effect on my life because we shared the same granddaughter. She had such an effect on my life that when she passed, it was if, as for my grandson, they never really left. They're still here with me. I still feel them. I can still hear them. But like that incense example that I gave, I can't physically touch them. But I realize, I can see with my real eyes, that only their physical body is gone. Their energy, their goodness, their lovingness still surrounds me as well as others. We'll take another break here, and I'd like to talk to you about your work in Brazil and how you're helping other therapists and other healers in their work. We'll be right back.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
I went to Brazil in 2001, and because I was so fascinated by the energy work that I saw going on there, and that means in particular the extraordinary healing that was going on for both people with physical illness as well as psychological issues, so I decided to spend 6 months out of every year for the next 11 years in Brazil learning about the people that I saw who were doing this kind of healing, as well as what they were doing. And so as a way of sharing this, I actually took 60 groups of people down to visit the healer, one in particular who was in Brazil, who was having great success. And so my learning about this form of spiritual healing that was done there was obviously expanded by watching so many people also interact and be healed in various ways. So in 2012, I decided that it was time that I bring back to my own country more of what I'd learned. And I had done it, actually, between 2001 and 2012, I wrote several books as well as creating two documentary films, because I wanted to help people understand what I was also experiencing. But I thought there's another way that I can bring it back. And so the first thing I did was try to take the pulse of what was going on in the United States. And I live in New England, so especially in my area of the country, what was the mental health care system providing for people? Was it effective? What did statistics tell us in terms of the amount of mental health or mental illness was happening? I felt that was important background, so that I could kind of see where my knowledge might be helpful to people. And what I found at that particular time was that mental illness is actually epidemic. It's growing at a fast rate, and the number of people who have to turn to the government for disability payments is growing rapidly, especially with that group of people who see themselves as mentally ill. So I read on about this, and research was coming to light, telling us really that the psychiatric medications that we have had great faith in are not performing as well as we had hoped. And in fact, we really need to find alternatives, and alternatives that don't have the negative side effects that the psychiatric medications have. So I'm not anti-psychiatry. I'm not anti-drug, because obviously there's been great benefit for people who have taken drugs, and also in seeing some psychiatrists has been extremely helpful for some people. But we are at a transition phase, and we really need to seriously rethink how we've been looking at mental illness, and also rethink what mental health is all about. So after taking the pulse of what was going on in the United States, I decided that I would start a learning platform online so that I could reach people all over the world, and that I would be teaching some courses, short courses, most of them. And these would basically inform people of the full range of ways of treating mental health issues. So oftentimes our doctors simply, and nurses, simply don't have time to educate us about these alternatives to the to taking psychiatric medications. And if we turn to Google, or if we turn to the internet in some way to get information, we won't find a lot, or we may find a little bit too much and become very confused, because we don't know enough to be able to figure out, well, what is really going to be good for me and what isn't. So as a psychologist, I've actually vetted or reviewed a variety of different kinds of therapies and selected the ones that I feel are the most effective, that can give people the best results, And then people can turn to this particular website called imhu.org. They can turn to that website to learn about various alternatives and also gain contact information so that they can find the practitioners that will be most in line with what they want. And my sense is that education is extremely important for us to learn how to take care of ourselves, to learn about community resources that might be helpful, and as well as learning about these alternative therapies, which include, by the way, meditation and energy work, and also include things that our doctors never learned in medical school. For instance, a course on nutrition and micronutrients, meaning vitamins and minerals, that can help us enormously to find mental balance. So I have been the executive director of imhu.org since its inception, and we'll be 4 years old in May.
Congratulations.
2018. And thank you. And we have 30 courses, and a couple of them are live, but most are online. And one of the things that I teach that is live is I take healthcare providers to Brazil once a year for a one-week seminar. And during that seminar, they are exposed to what I know about what's going on in Brazil, but also they meet Brazilian spiritist psychiatrists, psychologists, nurses, and mediums who work together at the spiritist psychiatric hospitals in Brazil. And in these hospitals, they offer an integrative kind of care. In other words, just as in our conventional hospitals here, they check out to see if a person has any physical disabilities that need attention. They check out to see if a person has any social issues. For instance, they've lost their job, they've lost all their money, or they've been victimized by prejudice in their community. All those things certainly impact our mental health. And so they're given social services if they need them, but they're also attended to in terms of any kind of psychological issues they might be having personally, so that they can overcome those difficulties. And within these spiritist psychiatric hospitals, they also work with people on a spiritual level. And that means they offer things like Reiki treatment, and also they offer contact with intuitives that have something called medical intuition. In other words, these people are so sensitive that they can, in fact, see through a person to be like an X-ray machine does and be able to perceive what is at the root of their difficulty. And then that medical intuitive can also give the most concise treatment plan for that person. And the medical intuitives in this hospital work side by side with the psychiatrists and the other highly trained medical doctors. So there's a very respectful relationship between those who are medical intuitives and spiritual healers and those who are psychiatrists and psychologists. We don't have anything like that in this country. In fact, there's nothing like this anywhere else in the world. Only in Brazil.
That I can believe, because I can remember years ago, before I owned my own practice and worked at social service agencies, you were not allowed to speak of God or prayer or mediums or spiritualism or spiritists in any kind of way at all. And I thought that so peculiar, because how else do we get to the root of what is going on with us if we don't implore that those things such as prayer, such as thinking about a higher power, such as removing your ego out of the way and letting go of control and surrender. Surrender is one of the words that I love. I surrender all. I'm open to all. And with that, I've found that clients who are willing to be open, to go beyond what has not worked for them in the past. You know, I always say, what do you have to lose? If your medication is not working, talk therapy, you're saying, yeah, it's not doing it for me. Well, let's take it to another level. Let's become more evolved. Let's add to that. How about adding, if they're comfortable with prayer, if they're comfortable with meditation, if they're comfortable with whatever modalities there are, whatever their comfort level is, let's start there.
Great idea. Great idea. And it's just so curious, isn't it, that we have, for instance, in this country right now, a huge problem with addiction. And right now what's in the news is opioid addiction, and it is taking so many people's lives. And we know from those who have suffered from alcohol addiction that when they begin to embrace more of a connection to their higher self, then they tend to get better. In other words, not have as much addiction. So we know the power of that. And we also, as a predominantly Christian country still, follow the story in the Bible that says that Christ himself did laying on of hands, which is a kind of energy work. So why aren't we using this?
I don't ask why. I just ask what. And if my client is willing to do such exercises with me, if they are in that space, I say, let's go for it. Let's do it. Let's see what happens. Practice, if it's meditation. As one woman said again, I just can't sit still and just, you know, cross my legs and go, I'm like, so who says you had to do that? How about for our next session, we have a walking meditation. We go outside. We go out into the fresh air, breathing techniques. There's so much education and knowledge that can be gained by that. And breathing, taking in the air, watching your body. I've seen many people where they think they're breathing, but they're not. Because after a while, you'll hear that, like they're trying to catch their breath. And then I realize, see, that's your body telling you, you're not here, knock, knock, come back. And when I say doing walking meditation, I may term it as walking psychotherapy. Instead of us being in the office, because some people may not be ready for that. Instead of being in the office, let's do our therapy outside. I remember years ago when that came to me, I had a woman who, with her diagnosis, she could not stand to be in closed places. And so, of course, my office had a door, and as such, it was an enclosed space. And I quickly realized she really couldn't handle it. She had almost a panic attack in the office. So once we were able to calm down, smooth that, beginning to breathe again, I said, why don't we do the rest of our session outside? Phenomenal. This has been years ago. To see her now, she's a completely different person. She's not on medication. She's not depressed. although she's like every other human, we all have crises. And so she does what we call a check-in. She'll call in and check in with me and say, Dr. Beth, I'm ready for another walk. I've got such and such going on in my life, and I'd like to have some assistance with that. And I just found that so powerful.
Beautiful story. Wonderful story. And we're all learning, aren't we, how to integrate the very best of what comes from other cultures, like meditation and walking meditation and acupuncture and Reiki. We're learning how to integrate that with the very best of psychology that we learned in school that has real benefits. So I'm inspired by your story, Dr. Bev. It's a great thing to do with people, is to do a walking meditation. And my experience too is that there are a lot of people, especially if they feel agitated, that just can't consider seriously sitting down and sitting still for a period of time to meditate. It's like it seems impossible. So a walking meditation's an excellent idea.
Thank you so much. And I want to say to you that I've enjoyed having you as my guest today. I will, there will be links on your show page, and that will not only be for the number of books that you've written, which have been quite a few. I'm very, all I can say is, wow, what a great breadth of work and education and knowledge that you've given to the world through your books. And we will also have a link to your website as well. And again, I appreciate you for expanding the knowledge of our audience. Emotions are